We did the prayer.
Om abhyayantu mamangani vak pranas chakshushrotramato palindriyani cha sarvani sarvam brahma upanishadam maham brahma nirakuryam mama brahma nirakarot anirakaranamastvanirakaraname astu tadatmani yate ya upanishatsu dharmaste mahi santu te mahi santu om shanti shanti shanti.
Let's go to the last verse in part one, verse 9. Yat pranena na praniti.
Yat pranena na praniti.
Yena prana praniyate.
Yena prana praniyate.
Tat eva brahma tvam vidhi.
Tat eva brahma tvam vidhi.
Na idam. Yat idam upasate.
Yat idam upasate.
Okay. To say yet that which pranena by prana na praniti is, I would say, is not sustained. Prana, the five pranas, are really what sustain the body, give the life to the body. But the prana is not sustaining Brahman. Brahman is sustaining the prana, right? Because of the sat-chit of Brahman, the nature of Brahman, the conscious being, which is Brahman, it is that sat that, if we can just say sat, that being itself, which is because of which the prana has any being at all. So conscious being, which is non-dual, it has no parts, it has no moving parts, it has no parts whatsoever, actually. That self is what sustains the prana, not vice versa. So it says, that which nat praniti, that one who praniti does not breathe or does not do any of its functions, does not have any of the functions, or is not sustained by the prana, but by whom the prana itself is sustained, right? By whom the prana itself is able to carry out its functions. So know that one to be Brahman, not one that you meditate upon as this. It means not one that you meditate upon as an object. Brahman is not an object to be meditated upon. Brahman is the self of all objects. Right? So this kind of completes this set of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 verses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 verses, I guess. All of these verses give you kind of a meditative, contemplative stance off of this verse number 4. Which again, in these next verses that we're moving to, is going to be coming up again and again. It's really the major vision of the Upanishad. So in this verse number 4, it says, that which is different from what is known, that which is other than what is known, what can be known as an object, and at the same time, that which is beyond, other than the unknown. So that which is other than the known, and that which is other than the unknown. Anyad eva tad virita atha Atta'u viditat adi. Then he says, this being so, iti shushruma purvesham ye naha tad vyachachakshire. So we've been taught in this way, we've listened to, we've done the shravana, from our, we've heard this from our teachers, the ones who have come before us, Purvesham. And they have taught this. They are the ones who have taught this for us. They are the ones who have taught this to us. Naha means us. So Vyacha Chakshire, they have taught this to us until we understood. This is how they've taught it. Before that, in the previous verse, it says, Navidmaha Navijanimaha. We don't know. Brahman is not able to be known as an object. We do not know Brahman. If we do not know Brahman, then how can we teach it? It's a huge statement. This is probably this statement itself is really emphasizing the fact that the Vedas themselves are the pramana for this knowledge. This knowledge is gained from the Upanishads, from the Veda pramana. Why? Because we cannot know it. So here the teacher says, we do not know this. We have no means. We have no means of knowledge to reveal this to us. And so therefore it has to be something revealed to us, right? We don't have the means of knowledge to know this. And so therefore that means of, as human beings, we don't have the means of knowledge to know this, because all of our means of knowledge have to do with the knowledge that we can gain from within the creation. That's what our means of knowledge are for. We have no means to know of knowledge to know that which is beyond the known and the unknown. If it was unknown, then we could use our means of knowledge to make that thing known. But it's neither the known or the unknown. So how can we possibly know it? So then, since we as human beings, the teachers themselves are saying this is not an object of knowledge, we do not know ourselves. Nor do we have any idea how to teach you. Right? We both don't know it and we have no idea how to teach you, because how could we possibly teach you if it's beyond the known and the unknown? How are we going to do that? So therefore, we have listened to our predecessors, those people who have come before us, and they have taught this to us to a point of our understanding it. Now, think of it like this. These Upanishads themselves are viewed as beginningless, as coming from the creation. Okay? There, the pramana itself is something that comes as a revealed knowledge that comes with the creation. So now say this Upanishad, just for your own imagination to kind of understand the situation here. Say the Rishi at the beginning of the creation is teaching this Upanishad. And that Rishi says, you know, we do not know. Right? Nor do we know how to teach you this. Okay? We don't know how to teach you. Yeah? Therefore what? And he says, therefore, you know, he says, why don't we know how to teach you? Because it's not an object of our knowledge, so how can we know? None of our pramanas will work, right? Nor it is something that is unknown. Right? If it was unknown, at least it could become known, but it's not unknown either. It's neither known nor it's unknown. Why is it neither known or unknown? Because it's self-evident, conscious being. Consciousness, by its very nature, is known, not as an object. Certainly not unknown. It's known experientially as conscious being. That's what we call self-evident. I am self-evident. I don't require a pramana to be known. So I am beyond what is known can be known as an object, and I'm also beyond what is not known. Neither one of these qualify. So how can one teach this? So they say, he says, how can it be known? Well, we have learned from Sushruma, we have learned from those who came before, Purvesham, those who came before, who have taught this to us. So who came before? Mm-hmm. Beginningless type. These Upanishads are viewed as coming with the creation. When was the first creation? The creation has always been here. It comes into manifestation, is sustained, it goes into resolution. There is no beginning to the creation. So there is, in that sense, no beginning to the Upanishads. This knowledge comes along with the creation. if this knowledge comes along with the creation, what does that mean? Because it doesn't come along as some ready-made knowledge. It comes along as an Upanishad, which is meant to remove the ignorance so that you're the self that you are, which is already known in terms of being self-evident, has to be recognized in the context of this creation. It has to be recognized. Because otherwise, if I am not recognized in the context of this dual creation, then wherever the sattva is, I am. I am that. So I am my mind. I am my sense organs. I am whatever the mind and sense organs illumine in terms of an upadhi. This body enjoys consciousness. So I am this body. My mind enjoys consciousness. I am my mind. My sense organs enjoy consciousness. I am my sense organs. And in terms of this body, which I indwell, all of my physical sense organs are part of this physical body. The sattva indwells, the sattva sense organs indwell and pervade all of these sense organs, and the sense of touch goes all through the body. So what can I say? This is me. I am this conscious being. What else can I say? This is the problem. What resource do I have to tell me anything else when this is my immediate experience? Who is going to differentiate consciousness from me? From me, my mind. Who's going to differentiate consciousness from me, the conscious mind? Who's going to do that? There's nobody there to do it. How can the mind do it? How can the mind differentiate itself from me when it never does not enjoy consciousness? Every single vritti enjoys consciousness. And so this problem, the problem of the jiva, this problem of the ajnanam, is a beginningless problem with no solution, really, on the part of the jiva, right? Because we have no means of knowledge. If we had a means of knowledge, that would be different. But as the Katha Upanishad says, there's no one to turn around and look at me. I have all my sense organs, all my organs of action are all for, you know, negotiating this world and being part of this world. So these things I have no means of knowledge for. I have no idea how to teach you. But then how did you learn them? Well, you know, we learn from those who came before us, and we're teaching you in the same way that we were taught. And when we were taught in the way that we were taught and were made to see, to recognize that, it is in that way that we teach you. That's what it is. It didn't come from me. Right? Because this jiva upadhi has no way of knowing this. I am this. But I have no means of knowledge to know myself. I can only be myself. And that is self-evident, that I am a conscious being. This me is there, self-evident. I know that completely. But I don't know it as an object. And so how do I know that this me is actually the self of the whole universe? How do I know that? What means of knowledge do I have to tell me that? I can at least maybe through some anvayavyatireka, some type of logic, differentiate myself, right, from the changing thoughts. There's somebody here who's stable. Me, this person abiding in this body with this body, mind, sense organs, in my mind, I can find some stability. Right? Because the namarupas keep on changing, but I'm always here. So I'm the stable function of the mind. I'm the stable function of the... It's also true from the standpoint of the mind. But what is going to tell me that I'm actually free of the mind and this is all mitya? How to figure that out? So... These initial verses here are beautiful in that they're really capsulizing the whole problem that we're faced with. Now in this last verse, he says also by the prana, you know, this prana which enlivens the whole body, you know, this prana that enlivens the whole body does not enliven the atma. It doesn't enliven me, it enlivens the body. In fact, I'm aware of the prana. Right? So the one because of whom the prana is known, that one I am. The one because of whom the prana is known, I am that one. The one upon whom the prana depends for its being, I am that one. Because I am being existence itself. The prana exists because of who? The prana is continually changing. So it needs an adhishtana. It needs something to give it that being. I am that one. I am the one that gives it that being. So I am the being of the prana, but the prana isn't the... the prana doesn't depend upon the prana. I don't depend upon the prana. The atma is not breathing. The atma is not having a digestion process going on. The atma is not having any circulatory system happening. That's all for the body. So the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, and, you know, the prana enlivening this physical body gives it, you know, life as long as it's here, and then when it exits, the body's dead. So the prana is really important for us, for this body. But what is it doing for the atma, the one that illumines, right, the prana? Nothing. It's because of me that the prana exists, right? And it's because of the prana that the body exists. This body's dead. The prana goes, it doesn't have any more functions, it's just a dead body. But I support the prana, I'm the self of the prana, but the prana doesn't in turn support me. Just like all of the other verses, getting down to the basic issue. So, may you know that one who is free of the prana, on whom the prana depends, may you know that one to be Brahman. May you know that one to be Brahman, not this which you meditate upon. Sometimes prana is meditated as Hiranyagarbha. If you meditate upon the prana, often that's a meditation on Hiranyagarbha, because Hiranyagarbha is not only the sattva, for the sattva that pervades the whole creation, it's also the rajas. I'm trying not to listen to them, but they're having a good time. It sounds like there's three of them.
The king just came along.
Yeah. So, anyway. Just as a note, sometimes the prana as the life force is meditated on as Hiranyagarbha. It means Hiranyagarbha, remember, is really just the sattva and rajas. Right? Because if the tamas is there, but it goes through panchakarana to become virat. And so the sattva is going to be that which allows the whole Hiranyagarbha to be like a conscious mind. You can look at it this way, like an infinite consciousness, which then envelops the whole virat, which is tamas. So if you're kind of making a parallel between this physical body and the total physical body. And then what gives all of the energy? That's the rajas, all of the change. But the rajas, all the rajas of the five elements put together, make this vital force. So I can look at the whole life force in the form of Hiranyagarbha, and then I can worship Hiranyagarbha as prana, as an upasana. A lot of the upasanas, like especially, I keep thinking that there's so many beautiful upasanas in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad at the beginning, where they'll visualize the whole Ishvara Upadi, where the eyes will be the sun, the reins will be the urine, the earth will be the feet, and it'll get very, very complex, you know. So the prana will be the life force in one way or another, and they do these visualizations, which then you, as a jiva, you do an upasana, you have a visualization of Ishvara. But you're not included in that visualization. When it's upasana, you are worshipping Ishvara in this form and gaining punya from it also, and gaining what we call chitta-naischalya, a steadiness of mind, because you're holding this big construction in your mind. So you get a steadiness of mind there, you know, and you get that worship of Ishvara. But for us, if we were to do an upasana, what would start as an upasana of this whole very, very beautifully described upasana, where every step of that visualization is made. You do that visualization, but you include yourself in, along with all other jivas, and you abide as the self. Right? Then that's no longer an upasana. What really makes it an upasana, that becomes nididhyasana. So an upasana becomes nididhyasana, that visualization of Ishvara, or even of a devata. It only becomes nididhyasana when the knower is included in the upasana, in the visualization. So if I can include the whole universe, including my own upadhi, in the visualization, and then I abide as Brahman, that's nididhyasana. I can abide... Another, just a couple of things on this since we're running up this section. If I do a nididhyasana on the self, on myself as non-dual Brahman, just conscious being, does the vision for a jnani of Ishvara count as nididhyasana? Because there's so much multiplicity there. It's not non-dual Brahman. Or is it? We would have to say, actually, it is non-dual Brahman. Because the Maya Upadhi is Mithya. And from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi, which has Brahman for its adhishtana, there is no duality at all. Because something which has no being other than Brahman does not make two. And so we do nididhyasana on the Ishvara Upadhi, right? But when doing it on the Ishvara Upadhi, I am itself, which I am the self of Ishvara. So that's why it's a wonderful nididhyasana, because I then recognize my greater upadhi. The upadhi that has sarvajnatvam is all knowledge, you know, all capacity. That is actually my upadhi, right? The upadhi of the Atma. The jiva upadhi is my upadhi also. Right now, with this upadhi, I'm only experiencing my upadhi, my Ishvara upadhi, from within the confines of my prarabdha karma and through the means of knowledge I have available to me. But that doesn't mean that this is not me, that this is not my maya upadhi. Think of if you have a dream, the whole dream comes from you, it is your upadhi. And so you can recognize it as your upadhi, which you can easily do in the dream, at least when we're out of the dream and looking back in. But if you're in the dream as a character, it's still your upadhi. This is still your upadhi, but from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, you're looking around within the upadhi as a limited being within the total upadhi of the dream. So, therefore, you take yourself as limited. You're the limited jiva upadhi, and this is the limitless Ishvara upadhi. But who does the Ishvara? What is the self? Who is the self of the Ishvara upadhi? I am. I am the self. And so this is my upadhi, and this is my upadhi also. And in fact, each one of you is my upadhi. In fact, every single thing within this creation is my upadhi, because there's nothing that is away from me. It's just that when I have this physical upadhi here, I've taken this birth and I have this physical upadhi, my sense of touch doesn't go out into the whole creation to include it. And so I seemingly stop here. Seemingly. Because actually, just think about your prarabdha karma, your sense of sight, for instance, your sense of hearing is inclusive of everything. Right? Everything is included in you, but it's not as real as the sense of touch. I should have a sense of touch go out and include everything. It doesn't do that. But with your knowledge, you know that to be true. You know that to be true because there's nothing that can limit consciousness to make my consciousness not be your consciousness. So this is my upadhi, but all beings are my upadhi. Ishvara is also my upadhi, but I don't experience it that way. But once I know myself, I can recognize that. We can say, when I say that, from your standpoint, when you say, this is my upadhi, you know, the my you're referring to is the Atma. Right? I can't say you are my upadhi because I'm not making a mistake, you know, taking you to be me, like I can take this body, mind, sense organs to be me. But from the standpoint of myself, you know, you take yourself, you're the Atma, to be this body, mind, sense organs. I can take myself to be this body, mind, sense organs. So all of us are upadis to the one same self. Then I can as well say, all of you are my upadis. How can I say that? All of you are my upadis. Because there's only one me. And you can say the same thing, all of you are my upadis. Because there's only one self. It's a little play with words, but nevertheless, it's also true. This whole creation is my creation. I am Ishwara. Ishwara is mitya. Right? Ishwara is mitya. I am its adhishtana. It comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. Ishwara's self is myself. Myself is Ishwara's self. There are not two selves. So this Ishwara upadi is me. I am Ishwara. The Vedanta knowledge is I am Ishwara. I, this jiva, am Ishwara. Because there is only one self, and Ishwara is mitya. Mitya has no being apart from me. And so that's the vision of the Upanishads. So now, having taught all of this to the group of students that are there, you know, receiving this knowledge from the Rishi, now he makes a statement about, you know, kind of questioning in a way, testing them, whether they've really understood this or not. Right? And so in this next verse, have you chanted it? Yeah. Okay, repeat after me. Huh? Okay. Yadi manyase suvedeti.
Yadi manyase suvedeti.
Dharam eva pinunam.
Dharam eva pinunam.
Tvam veta brahmano rupam.
Tvam
veta brahmano rupam. Yadasya tvam.
Yadasya tvam.
Yadasya deveshu.
Yadasya deveshu.
Atanu mimamsyamevate.
Atanu mimamsyamevate.
Manye viritam.
Manye viritam.
Okay. So now, the teacher, the Rishi, is talking to his students, making a statement to his students. And he says, Yadi manyase suvedeti. So if I break the sandhi, Yadi manyase suveda iti. It says to his students, Yadi if manyase you think suveda iti means puts it in quotes. If you think you know this well, suveda. The idea with suveda is if you think you know this as an object. Right? So if you think you know this, suveda means this is something that you know very well. Okay? You've had much experience with this. You know this very well as an object. So if you think, yadi means if, manyase, if you think or if you consider, suveda, that you know this well, iti, quotes. Then he says, daharam eva api nunam tvam veta brahmanaha rupam. He says, second line first, nunam, certainly, then for sure, nunam, for sure, certainly, tvam veta, yeah, certainly, tvam veta, you know, tvam you, veta, since certainly, for sure, you know, brahmanaha rupam, the nature of Brahman, Brahman swarupa, you actually, then for sure, you know the nature of Brahman, the very swarupa of Brahman. Daharam eva api. Only a little. You only have a little knowledge. If you think that you know well, if you think you know very well, then for sure, you have only a little tiny knowledge. Little alpa. Alpa means little tiny knowledge. You have only a little knowledge of the nature of Brahman. What's so nice here, then I'll finish this and then tell you more about it. Yet asya, so he explains a little bit more. So you have this brahmanaha rupam. If you think you know the nature of Brahman, when you say, I know it so well, if you think that you know the nature of Brahman, daharam eva api, you know it only a little. And he gives example. Yet asya tvam, that nature, the nature of Brahman, which nature, tad, that nature, So which nature, yad rupam, which nature, brahmanaha asya, of that Brahman, is you. You take yourself, if you think, this is the idea, it's a little complicated in the Sanskrit. He says, you only know a little. But you're taking either the swarupa of Brahman as being something which belongs to you. Right? Tvam. So you, the swarupa of Brahman is you. If you think that, the swarupa of Brahman is you, and you, if you know Brahman as an object, and then you're taking that the swarupa of Brahman is you, that innermost self that abides in your body, you know, and so this is Brahman right here, this body, mind, sense, organs, person that has Brahman innermost. So if you take that innermost Brahman in abiding in the body, then you know Brahman very little. And then he gives another possibility. Or if you take this, the nature of Brahman, as abiding among the devas. Deveshu means among the devas. If you take one of the devas, for example, it's above all the devas, that Brahman is one of them. If you take the nature of Brahman as being one of them, who is kaschit, means in the commentary, kaschit, one of them, who is abiding among all of the devas, one of those is Brahman. Then again, you know that Brahman only a little bit. So then he says, that being the case, atta nu, therefore, if that's the situation, mimamsyam evate, you need to do more analysis. Mimamsyam means now there's analysis on the Vedas of what the teaching is actually saying. You have to get into that a little bit more deeply. He says, definitely eva, mimamsyam eva. Definitely for you, there is more analysis that needs to be done. You have not yet understood. So not even the viveka anymore, it's that you have misunderstood. So we have to go at it again. There's much more teaching that is required here, he says. So just a couple of more things about this before I do this last punchline that I love. Okay. Everything that he said here is now going to be reiterated in one way or another. First thing is to recognize that Brahman is not something that you can know as an object. It's not something known. So now he reiterates, if you think that Brahman is vidita, something that you can know, then you don't know. If you think that Brahman is something to be contemplated on, to do means upasana, then again, you don't know. Brahman has to be recognized as the one. Brahman has to be recognized differently, as the one who is not objectifiable, who is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, the eye of the eye of the eye, the prana of the prana. It is not something that you can objectify and look at. But again, when you say the ear of the ear, the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, etc., they are not talking about someone else. They're talking about something about you that indwells this upadhi, that indwells the prana, that indwells the eye, that indwells the ears, that indwells the speech, that indwells all of the mind. That means it's not away from me, right? It's the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind. All of these things are what we call sadhana. They're all the one who is the eye of the eye and the mind of the mind and the ear of the ear. We're talking about one thing. The eye is different, the ear is different, the speech is different, the mind is different, but the one who indwells all of them, right, is not objectified by them, but indwells all of your means of knowledge of the life force itself, that one is Brahman. So that's not going to be something away from you. That has to be something that is the one because of whom all of these things function. So that one, because of whom all of these things, all the karmendriyas, the mind, and all of the sense organs function, know that one to be Brahman. Not something that you're looking at. Not something that you're worshipping out here as an object. No, it's the one who indwells all of these things and also, therefore, is other than all of these things. Because sadharana, Sadharana means that the ear of the ear is the mind of the mind, is the speech of the speech, is the eye of the eye, is the prana of the prana. It's the same one. And so, because it's the same one, now it's sadharana. It's not going to be held accountable by any one of those things, because it's what indwells all of those things. And so now it indwells the prana itself. It's the adhishtana of the prana itself. So if you can go on, we'll go on it more in the Upanishad, but you can also think like this. Well, if it's the mind of the mind and the eye of the eye and the ear of the ear, and so also distinct from all of those things, free of all of those things, because it's only one and there are many, then what about the mind of my friend's mind and the mind of my other friend's mind and the ear of my friend's ear and the ear of my other friend's ear? It's sadharana. Where is it? What is binding it? Your ears aren't binding it. Your mind is not binding it. The prana is not binding it. And so this, know this one to be Brahman. Not one thing that you're looking at. Know the one that really is the adhishtana of all of these things. Of my sense organs, of all sense organs. Of my upadhi, of all upadhis. Of my prana, of all pranas. Because there's nothing trapping it. You think it's being trapped because your ears are different than your mind, and your mind is different than your eyes, and your eyes are different than your speech, and your speech is different from your prana. But the sadharana there is the consciousness that indwells each one of those. And so where's its limit? Where's its limit? It's indwelling each one of yours too, and each one of yours too. It's the one that, because of whom, all of these things have such it. Have consciousness, have being. It is the adhishtana of all things. There's nothing to limit it. So then he says, you know, know that to be Brahman, that one who indwells all of these things about you and of all beings, really. Know that as Brahman. That's something that you're worshipping out here as an object. And then he says, if you think that you know it well, as an object, it's the meaning. If you think you know it well as an object, then really, you know it very little. If you think that the nature of Brahman, the swarupa of Brahman, say, is just indwelling inside of you, right? It's you. You are Brahman, and so you means I am Brahman. This Brahman indwells me, and so I am Brahman. Or this Brahman indwells the devata, you know. And so that devata is Brahman. Not the other devatas, though. Not all of you, either. Just me. Brahman is indwelling me. So I know Brahman. I'm a very special person. That's also there in the commentary. If you think you're so very good, so very special, because you have Brahman, you know, you really know only a little bit. Why does he even say you know only a little bit? Because it's also true that you are Brahman. You are Brahman, and you are Brahman. You are Brahman. That's also true. So if you take yourself to be Brahman, you are Brahman. If you take yourself to be Brahman, you are Brahman. But what about the whole creation? You don't know that. You don't know that Brahman is the adhishtana of the entire creation. Say you know that devata, my devata, Jnaneshwari. She is Brahman. And the others should all prostrate to her because she is Brahman. They should all recognize her as Brahman. But actually, they're all Brahman too. And so if you just think your form of God is Brahman, you're the image of God that you worship, that is Brahman, that is God, then you know very little. You know? If you think you are Brahman, means with your body, mind, sense, organs, you are Brahman, you know very, very, very little. Even though what you know is true, it's not completely true. It's just a little tiny bit true. Because you are Brahman, that Ishtadevata is Brahman, but you don't know Brahman is the self of all jivas, of all Ishtadevatas, of the entire creation, that you don't know. And so you have to do more mimamsa. Therefore it's necessary, you have to study a little bit more, you have to go more into this. And so this is how he introduces, this is the Rishi talking, and then the student says at this very end, he goes after the teacher said all of this, he goes, Manye viditam. I consider that I know. I think that Brahman is known. means I know Brahman. I think that I know Brahman, that Brahman is known by me, Brahman is known to me. So when Swamiji tells this, it's like, well, this guy has a lot of nerve. He's got a lot of nerve, you know, because, you know, he'll do it, he'll just kind of play act it, and he'll say, nobody wants to say anything after hearing this, you know. Mm-hmm. If you think you know Brahman, first of all, what does that mean? If you think you know Brahman, aren't I supposed to know Brahman after all this teaching? If you think you know Brahman as an object, you know, or you, if you take yourself to be Brahman, or your Ishtadevata to be Brahman, then you know very little. You haven't understood Brahman. You need to do more. Need to do more analysis. Then the student says, "I think I know Brahman." Somebody says, "No one's going to say that except this one student. He thinks he knows Brahman. What is this?" And so he can't leave it there. He has to explain why he knows Brahman. "I think I know Brahman." Then the next verse, he explains himself very beautifully. He says, so repeat after me, "Naham manye suvedeti.
Naham manye suvedeti.
No navedeti vedacha.
No navedeti vedacha.
Yonas tad veda tad veda. No navedeti vedacha.
No navedeti vedacha.
Na aham manye suveda iti. Naha na veda iti vedacha. Yaha naha tadveda, tadveda naha na veda iti veda cha." How do you like that? There's so many Vedas in there. So he says, so now, first in the previous verse, right, he says, I consider Brahman is known by me. Then he goes right away into the next verse. The student continues. He says, "Na aham manye. I do not think. Na aham manye suveda iti. I do not think it is suveda. I do not consider that it is known as an object, suveda." So, "Na aham manye, I do not consider suveda iti. I don't think that it is suveda, that Brahman is an object to be known. I don't think that I know Brahman as an object," he says. Then he says, because this suveda iti is what his teacher said. His teacher says, "If you think suveda iti, if you think it is known as an object, then you know very little," right? So he says, "I know Brahman. Brahman is known by me, but I do not think it is an object. I do not know. It is not that I consider I know it as an object. Na suveda. So I do not think it is suveda, but Brahman is known as an object. Naha naveda. But nor do I not know. Naha means not. Not I know." So in English you say, nor do I not know. I do not think I know Brahman as an object, but it is not that I don't know. I do not think, see, naveda, I do not know. I do not know. Naha, tunas, na'u, definitely not that I do not know. I do not think of Brahman, I do not know Brahman as an object, but it is not that I do not know. And then he says, Vedacha, he puts that in quotes, and then he says, Vedacha. Vedacha, we have two ways of translating that. Vedacha, often when you say that, this is a stand, it's just a device that we use in Sanskrit. Vedacha means I know and. So now if I say I know and, that will mean I both know and I don't know. That's one way. So you have Vedacha, I know and. It's not and I know. In this sense, it's I know and. What's the and? I know and I don't know. That's good for the context. I know it, but I don't know it as an object. So I both know it and I don't know it, because it's not something that can be objectified for me to know. And so in that way, yeah, I do not know it, but I know. That's one way. Swamiji takes this, he translates actually both ways. And in the Bhasha, in the Shankara Bhasha, this is how they do it. The Veda Cha, that Cha means Naveda. So I both know and I don't know. There's another way, and I think Swamiji probably got this from Atika on the Bhashya, probably by Anandagiri, who's one of the main commentators of Shankara. He takes this both ways, how I just said, and then also he has this nice statement, Sarva Samshya Bhakshakaha. That extra cha, that Veda, that cha, means Sarva Samshya Bhakshakaha. Bhakshakaha means the one who devours the food, you know, the one who devours what? Sarva Samshayaha, all doubts. That cha is the devourer of all doubts. And so then you would take it like this. I don't consider that I know it as an object, right? But I don't not know. And I know. I don't not know. Okay? Vedacha. It's just once again saying, I know. I know without any doubt. So that final I know, he doesn't really have to say it again, but it's weak. He says, I don't consider Brahman to be an object, but it is not that I don't know. I know. That Vedacha, I know. That I know, that last I know, is what we call sarva, means all. You know, samshya means doubt. So sarva samshya, all doubts. Then this bhakshaka is the one who devours all of the doubts. So when he says that, I know, that final I know, because he's meant it very clearly, I know Brahman's not an object, but it's not that I know, don't, but it's not that I don't know. I know. All doubts wiped out. Or you can take it as Vedacha. I know and I don't know. I know Brahman, but not as an object. Not Suveda, not as an object. So you can take it. Swamiji translates it both ways in different places. So. But in his commentary, he writes out in the Sanskrit this Sarva Samshya Bhakshakaha, you know, because he likes that. It's very strong. So he says this, he makes it very clear, and then he says something else that makes also very strong. He says, Yaha Naha, the one, he who. See, they're sitting there as a group of students with the Rishi. So this one student speaks out like this. I know clearly, not as an object. It's not that I don't know. I definitely know. And then he says, the one who naha among us, one person naha, yaha naha, one person, the one person of among us, one if any student among us, Tadveda understands that, what I've just said. If he understands what I've just said, that I don't know as an object, but it's not that I don't know. In fact, I know. Sounds a little weird. You know? But if somebody among us, one of the students among us, gets what I'm saying, understands this, Tadveda, then he knows. He knows. Tadveda. So Tadveda, Tadveda. If he understands what I just said, then that person also knows. And then the question comes in, well, what was it exactly that you just said? And then he says, what I just said was, no naveda iti veda cha. It is not that I don't know. I know. Or it is not that I don't know. I know and I don't know. I don't know it as an object, but I know. Right? So anyone who understands this gibberish, you know, gibberish, mm-hmm. clearly, then that person knows. Right? Are those students, anybody who can understand what I'm saying? They also know. And so that's the student's response. Okay? Then the Shruti comes in itself and gives a and repeats in essence everything that has been said in those last five verses and what is just this said. So we're just going to read that. I'll translate it and then we'll do it in the morning. Yasya matam tasya matam.
Yasya matam tasya matam.
Matam yasya na veda saha.
Matam yasya na veda saha.
Avignatam vijanatam.
Avignatam vijanatam.
Vignatam avijanatam.
Vignatam avijanatam.
Yasya matam tasya matam.
Yasya matam tasya matam.
Matam yasya na veda saha.
Matam yasya na veda saha.
Avignatam vijanatam.
Avignatam vijanatam.
Vignatam avijanatam.
Vignatam avijanatam.
He says, yasya, let me do the sandhi. Yasya amatam tasya matam. Matam yasya na veda saha. Avignatam vijanatam. Vignatam avijanatam. What he says is, yasya, for whom amatam, it is not known. Means suved, is not known as an object. For whom it is amatam, unnegates the mata. For whom it is not known, tasya, for him, matam, it is known. But for the one who does not know it as an object, for that one, it is known. Brahman is known. So for whom Brahman is not known as an object, for that one, Brahman is known. For whom Brahman is known as an object, na veda saha, he does not know. Okay. Then he says, avignatam vijanatam, for there, the avignatam, Brahman is avig, Brahman understood. Brahman is avignatam, is not known, vijanatam. Brahman is, for whom Brahman is not avignatam, that which is not known, for the, let's put it this way, vijanatam, for the ones who know, vijanatam, Brahman is not known as an object. Then it says, vignatam, avijanatam, for the ones who don't know, Brahman is vignatam, is known as an object. Same thing reiterating. You can't know Brahman as an object. Okay, 100 times. You have to know, but not as an object, because it's yourself. All of itself.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.